but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
The sands of college athletics are shifting. There's a lot for fans to absorb. And I know a certain segment of fans don't like to hear about the business of sports. But it's important stuff, and I think we need to understand it. Daniel Libet, Sportico, joining us now. He lives in this world. He works in this world. Daniel, give me an idea. Like, this space in the last 2 or 3 years with media rights and the House settlement and the lawsuits, it is just absolutely blown up. How has that changed your world?
Well, I suppose it hasn't changed much, as this is my world. I find this utterly fascinating and arguably the most fascinating thing about college athletics. So, you know, I came in writing about this aspect of college sports, the off-the-field stuff, and that has only gotten more and more interesting in the last few years. So, yeah, if anything, it's kind of merged the interests of those of us who kind of primarily focus on the off-the-field with those who care about the on-the-field. I think one has arguably displaced the other, as you know from all of the coverage and writing that you do on this as well.
Power 5 now incorporating a new sports enforcement entity. Tell us more about it. House versus NCAA settlement comes down the pipeline, and you're going to need a new legal entity to oversee the enforcement there. Does this thing have enough teeth?
That's a good question. I mean, it certainly is likely to be a future defendant in a lawsuit, I would imagine. But, Ross Bellinger at Yahoo had been reporting back in February about the process of creating the new governance structure for college sports under the assumption that the House settlement passes. One key component of the settlement upon approval is that, you know, they're supposed to start ramping up enforcement on NIL deals and judging whether or not they're real NIL deals, and the conferences have enlisted Deloitte and other companies and are trying to now create the bureaucracy of the new bureaucracy of enforcement, which long rested with the NCAA. Particularly about judging the way athletes are being paid and if it's permissible. So, one of the new entities is supposed to be this new kind of enforcement commission, which was registered as an LLC yesterday. In key timing, the same day that the House parties gave their final filing to Judge Wilkin, asking for her to approve that this creature finally came into existence. I don't know if the LLC is what it will be named, but it seems to basically operate like a commissioner. There will be a commissioner or a CEO type people or an enforcement team. They will be the entity that judges the NIL deals of college athletes. Any NIL deal over $600 is supposed to be run through this gauntlet, judged on whether or not it's real NIL, judged on whether or not it conforms to some sort of fair market standard, whatever the hell that's going to be. This is the entity that will do it. And apparently we're going to learn a lot more in the next week or so on specifics of who and what this entity will be.
I was talking to the Gonzaga athletic director, Chris Standiford, on their campus a couple of weeks ago, and he was very interested in this because, you know, a lot of the mid-major programs are trying to keep pace with the Power Four, so to speak. And they want to know that, you know, that NIL money is going to be regulated and that, you know, they're not going to just be outspent by somebody who can throw a bag of money at a player. Big concern there. How much does this chief executive of that potential organization, how much does that hire matter, or where will they get the direction or directive from? Is this coming from the Power Four, Power Five, or who's appointing this person?
Yeah, I mean, it's the conferences who are going to be making the hiring, presumably in consult with the NCAA and other leagues and members, and with the house plaintiff attorneys. They have a big hand in overseeing this. That's kind of part of what the settlement is, the opportunity for oversight, presumably from the attorneys representing the athletes, in addition to the defendants in that case. I think that we're going to want to have somebody with a lot of gravitas just as a statement. Again, the litigation doesn't stop if or when Judge Wilkin approves the settlement for this. In some ways, it's just the next chapter of it begins. And this is going to be fought in a kind of PR war. You know, if the kind of college sports officialdom, the NCAA, the power conferences can sort of show to Congress, show to the public that they are really on the precipice of reining in the kind of chaos of college sports, that might be helpful in getting the NCAA, getting Congress to approve this long-awaited antitrust exemption for the NCAA. A lot of this, you know, is symbolic, but the symbolism is probably important, and they're going to want to show that they have a real, you know, commanding presence, and that this is a real thing, and that it can actually do what it's being tasked to do, which is, you know, kind of regulate and be considered the judge, the fair-minded judge over this kind of wild world that we've seen that's been vastly deregulated over the last 4 years. It's a tough order. Again, the thing is also going to probably be sued at some point for violating antitrust laws. So it's going to have to keep that in mind as well, and is probably being organized and staffed with that in perspective.
You had a piece on the release language in the House versus NCAA settlement documents, and a strange thing popped up among those trying to escape liability. The college football playoff appears in there. What is the aim of that, and how curious is that to people you talked with?
Well, I talked to the people who first raised the issue, which were some lawyers representing one particular objector of the settlement, a former athlete who objected purely on this ground, which is, you know, the settlement is a long and thorough and full of boilerplate document. There is a section of it towards the bottom that, you know, like any settlement agreement, is the mutual release, basically stipulating that if we agree to this deal, you know, you're not going to, then neither party is going to come back and sue us or our subsidiaries or our officers or any other people that are remotely connected to us on these same issues. And into that section was thrown the term the college football playoff, which raised eyebrows from some because the college football playoff is not part of the NCAA. Vehemently not part of the NCAA. It was not named as a party of any of the antitrust lawsuits, and it's unclear what even the college football playoff is. I mean, in terms of a legal entity that can be released. So this was raised by an objector. It actually got the attention of Judge Wilkin at last Monday's fairness hearing. She said she wanted some clarification on what the parties were. The college football playoff is a sort of fascinating case study in bureaucracy of college sports. It is, obviously the college football playoff is the successor to the BCS, but the actual legal construction of it is made of many different LLCs. It's 10 FBS conferences that are joint owners with different percentage shares. It has the original BCS LLC that's still a part of it. It has a nonprofit. It is kind of just a morass of bureaucracy. And the concern from at least the objector's attorneys, and in some cases the judge, is that this is going to give some sort of cover, legal cover, liability waiver to parties or entities that are not intended. And that was what the objectors were concerned about. The party, the NCAA, and the House plaintiffs came back in response yesterday to Judge Wilkins' questions and basically clarified at least the legal entities that they meant by it, but they did not back off on including the college football playoff as a release fee. Maybe this is no big deal, or maybe in a couple years or less time, we will see some scenario come out where somebody will be pointing to this and say, you can't sue the college football playoff or its related entities because you released it in the House settlement. That was the concern.
We're talking to Daniel Libet, Sportico. There is, I think, some concern as well that, you know, athletes may want to be employees, need to be employees. I find people in college athletics all over the place on this, and, you know, most of these schools are saying, no, we don't want them to be employees, but we want guardrails, which requires collective bargaining, which requires a union, which requires employment. Daniel, what do you see happening? You know, where's this headed? 5 years, 10 years from now, are football players employees, or are they still student athletes?
It is felt to me, and the lesson of NIL sort of has informed this, that the fulcrum for college sports to better balance on is if they concede a point on employee status, if you recognize college athletes as employees, if the law favors that interpretation, that in some ways a lot of the chaos that stakeholders in college sports complain about would be remedied, to your point, by some form of collective bargaining, that the employee classification can benefit both sides in that way. I mean, the lesson of NIL is this. Had the NCAA and the conferences and the member institutions long ago decided to give up the ghost on preventing college athletes from doing endorsement deals, Ed O'Bannon wouldn't have had reason to file suit, or if he did, there wouldn't have been the House case or the Carter case or the Hubbard case, or all of these state laws that basically sought to undermine the NCAA's authority or ability to enforce. I mean, that was a decision to continue to just challenge the challenge progress in a sense, and challenge what in the minds of many felt like a fair, more equitable system. The NCAA lost on that. I mean, we are witnessing now the byproducts of this. You know, if employee status is just the next step along that path, and if the NCAA and the parties are continuing to fight what is inevitable, then no lesson was learned. Clearly, they feel that is a bridge too far, and, you know, financially or for any other reason, that you know, despite of what the lessons learned from NIL, that this is, you know, they want to go to the mat again on preventing employee status. Maybe they're right this time, or maybe they're going to be wrong all over again and look back 4 or 5 years down the road and say, you know, we just gave up a lot more than we needed to. We lived through 5 years more of chaos than we needed to, just because we were so adamant about preventing college athletes from having the rights of university employees.
Finally, you know, you're in this position where you're reporting on all this stuff, and it's fascinating, it's interesting, it's important. There is a segment of fans, particularly, I think, older fans who have seen kind of the gamut and seen college athletics and grew up on college athletics, and now they go, wait a minute, this isn't college, this is like some semi-professional league, that are turned off by what they see. Is there any concern out there in the ecosystem for like fan engagement? And does anybody care if fans start to say, you know what, I'm just not on board with this? Or do you hear anybody talking about taking care of the game in that way, Daniel?
Yeah, I think this has been a very present concern. It's been one raised by the NCAA. It's been one raised by sort of, college sports leaders for, the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, this was the argument against NIL and the implementation. There was multiple arguments. One key one was that this was going to, kill the game and what all that was special about it. I think there's data out there for the
Daniel Libet with us, and I think we've lost him there. Daniel, you're there? Are you back? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Sorry, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, I got you back. Go ahead.
I think there's concern addressed. I think the data out there can swing both ways. I think you can point to a number of things that would suggest that this has not harmed interest in college sports, TV ratings, donations to universities and to athletic departments. College sports has never been what it once was, and you can keep playing that game and going back decade and decade and decade and finding it in the present moment to be something totally different than what it was before. You could have made that case in the 90s. You could have looked back to the 50s and so on and so forth. So there's nothing new about this argument. And again, it is a business, so if there is less interest, presumably that would have an impact on how it behaves going forward. But so far the market seems to be suggesting that despite these changes, there's still plenty of people willing to pay for college sports.
Daniel Libet, Sportico, check his work out online. Thank you, Daniel.
Always happy to be with you. Take care, John.
There he goes. I know that some of this is dry. I know that I share your disgust when I hear the House versus NCAA, and I'm like, show me the baby, get through this stuff, settle this suit. But I think it is interesting to kind of watch what is happening and who is standing up fighting for what in what corner of college athletics. By the time we all get to the stadium this fall and beyond, I think, all this stuff's getting settled now. I wonder how players collectively bargain if they don't become employees. I wonder how you get the guardrails back on if you don't allow them to unionize. But I also know that if you're going to make the athletes employees, you're going to have a lot of schools that just have to fold it up and go, hey, we can't do this. We can't have this many more employees on our payroll. Leave it here. Some parting thoughts on today's show. Next.